Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with me, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Randy McCaffrey. Randy is the co-founder and chief innovation officer of Cannabis Community Care and Research Network, also known as the C3RN. Thanks for joining us today, Randy.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, pleasure. So, let our listeners know where you're based out of today.
So, Cannabis Community Care and Research Network, we're based out of Worcester, Massachusetts.
Very good. And, I know you have a vast experience in the cannabis industry, 25 years plus over here. So you kind of, walk me through your journey, how you got, what's your background, how you got into the industry and learn kind of the ins and outs.
Sure. Yeah. So, I guess dating back to, my beginning of my adult era, so to speak, I was involved in the traditional cannabis industry, I like to call it. I'm a builder, so old homes restoration renovation in New England, but I've also been a cultivator and an advocate in the space for about 25 years. I've been building little secret bookshelf cultivation sites for about that long, but all the way up into BSL1, BSL2 labs and smaller scale cultivation facilities. In 2017, I met my business partner, Dr. Marion McNabb. Uh-huh. And we decided to open up C3RN. And basically what we are is a research, education, and advocacy group based, like I said, in Worcester, Massachusetts. Our intention is to really raise the level of dialogue to a more scientific level and really try to break stigma overall through education.
Oh, that's amazing. I really love that what you guys are doing there. And it seems like you guys have so many things going on there, social equity with research, with helping legislation, with education, so I guess, kind of breaking it down one by one, explain to me your social equity. I know you guys are the first statewide equity network actually in the nation.
Yeah. So, it's really exciting in the rollout of question four in Massachusetts. It's legislatively mandated that people disproportionately affected by the drug war have priority access and training to get into the industry. So if you live in an area of disproportionate impact, if you were arrested for a nonviolent drug offense, or if a family member was arrested for a nonviolent drug offense, then you qualify for this statewide program. And so we were announced as one of the six of the first statewide training vendors. So it's really exciting and kind of historical. It's the first statewide social equity program in the nation in the cannabis industry. And we're one of the first training vendors. So we're pretty proud of that. Awesome. And the first cohort will be starting in November. So it's gotten going now. We're excited.
Yeah, it's a big thing, in our industry, because so many people have been affected by it. With the war on drugs, recently, obviously the mass commutation, in Oklahoma, nice step, and Last Prisoner Project, a lot of great things going on with social equity. And for some reason, you hear this kind of chatter sometimes with the social equity that, maybe the people who it should be serving aren't the ones who aren't being served. You hear kind of in different areas that it's kind of, there people have different ideas about it and how they're used. And I guess, I've heard even that, people, the person, the candidate, the social equity candidate at the end, somebody comes in and buys the license from them or they become partners and it kind of, they kind of get bought out a little bit. Can you kind of speak on that a little bit? And
So one of the caveats of being a social equity applicant is that you get a priority access in the queue for your licensorship. So that means you're jumping all of the general applicants, and that is extremely attractive to an investor. Yeah. However, the majority of these investors there is a lot of predatory loans going around, a lot of predatory deals. And these people, generally, if you think about it, if you were arrested for cannabis or anything, and you might have missed out on an education, you might have missed out on life in general. So you may not have that business acumen to, really decipher what these deals are all about. And they may seem attractive in the beginning, but, these people know how to do this. And so it's rare that we've seen so far anything that actually is not predatory. We've been working on trying to sort of bridge that gap, because in our mind, this, it's not just one person. It's really about community redevelopment. So whereas these bigger companies are coming in and they're essentially extracting wealth from these communities and bringing it back to their global partnerships or whatever. Whereas what we would like to focus on is these social equity applicants that are in the area. They are mandated to hire a certain percentage of people from the area, and really, you know, and then even from a standpoint of when you're building your facility, hiring local and, you know, really putting that wealth back into the community, if that makes sense.
100%. You know, that is like so sad that people are being taken advantage of like that. Like you said, you know, they were affected by it and then they come in, you know, and, you know, it's kind of like that. It's just repeating over again in that predatory way when it's supposed to be protecting and giving back to the community. I guess, you know, I was actually privileged, you know, to go to San Francisco Equity Group, and they're doing something that's great, you know, helping candidates. They basically have a meeting every week where they're helping them through the process, making sure, you know, talking about people who are approaching them, kind of educating them, helping them with that. Is that something that you guys do as well, or, you know, helping to prevent this long term?
Absolutely. You know, and we like to put ourselves like we vet out a lot of these bigger companies because we work directly with them. And a lot of them, you know, I think generally want to give back to social equity, but at the same time, the whole industry itself is lacking this corporate social responsibility. You know, you have large hedge fund money coming into the industry where the people that have been doing this work have been looking over their shoulders for 30 years and they have PTSD worrying about getting arrested, and they're afraid of getting into a regulated market, you know? So that's a lot of what we do is really, that's the community standpoint, you know, in our name, and, you know, really trying to help, you know, these farmers and, you know, think about it, delivery drivers and retail people really migrate into a regulated market and give them a pathway through regulation and legislation. You know, it's going to be a long haul. Massachusetts is unique in its political platform for sure. It's an old boy network here. But the one thing that is really interesting about it is a public forum. And so everything they've done that the CCC does is completely transparent. They have an open data platform. So all of anything you may need or want to know about who's in the queue or who, you know, who's applying for licenses, all of that stuff is in an open data platform that's accessible and can be aggregated. So it's a unique situation in Massachusetts where your voice actually is heard. And, you know, they're continuously reforming the regulations, and they probably will continue to do that for years to come, since they were tasked with such a short period of time to actually write them. So they're baking them out even further. They just voted on a new set of regulations that added delivery and social consumption to the state. So, so we're right there on the front lines, really trying to help some of these guys navigate not only this, you know, finding capital, because that is by far the most difficult thing for these people to do. Especially there's not many investors out there that are going to, give you control of your own, you know, if you're going to put up all the money, they're going to want the 51%, not the 49%, I guess is where I'm getting at. And, so finding those types of investors where there's a different type of deal and, that is non-predatory is proven to be difficult, but you know, I think we're finding it's really going to be about an investor that really wants to give back and understands what that good could do. And so, yeah, so that is true. There's a lot of what we do right there from that standpoint.
I'm excited to see a lot of growth with that. You know, it's an opportunity, you know, for any VC out there, anybody listening to kind of, you know, set up their, you know, a venture capital group to be able to see what's going on and be able to give back really, and, you know, give a different reputation to the people, you know, like you said, you've been 25 years, traditional market, you know, and, you know, speaking to, you know, another person who's in for 20 years and calling it the Wild West, it's kind of like the Wild West again, so to speak, with these hedge funds coming in, people driving in money, seeing the green rush and just running in and trying to throw money at something that maybe they not only they not build, but maybe they don't know anything about as well. So definitely want to see.
You know? No, that's for sure. That's for sure.
And, you know, another thing you guys do that's great, you know, is you know, social equity and the research side, you know, which is something that we also need a lot of development in, you know, so, you know, and helping out people, helping out, you know, can you talk about the studies you guys are working on now with the research?
Absolutely. You know, as we know, research is either woefully underfunded in this arena, or you're forced to work with NIDA or NIH with unrepresentative samples of cannabis. So over our, we started our company in January 17, and for really the first year, we advocated for research licenses to be included in the rollout of question four. I must have, Mary and myself must have testified 30 times over that year. And we were able to, I'm not going to say it was all us, but we were one of the only people actually talking about it. So we were actually able to get research licenses put into the regulatory framework of the Massachusetts adult use. Ooh. So we're pretty excited about that. But in the meantime of them, you know, designing those regulations, we decided to just start doing research. So through our academic partnership at UMass Dartmouth, we are institutional review board approved through our research studies, and they are self-reported anonymous surveys. We don't collect any identifying information. The first one is a patient consumer survey that we partnered with multiple dispensaries and had them, their patient populations take these surveys, and we found incredibly striking results. At one dispensary, the question was, so basically 73% of all the respondents said that cannabis, they're actively reducing their prescription medication using cannabis. So, you know, these are striking numbers that we're finding in the industry. And it's been really helpful to help dissuade people that were on the fence about cannabis, because they've been fed such a horrible rhetoric over their entire adult lives. And so we figured science was the only way to really change their minds. I mean, it's interesting, you know, like 0.005% of the people in the world think the world is flat, right? But like 35% of the world thinks that cannabis is actually bad for you, right? And so, you know, it's interesting to see how science can help change those minds. And then our other research study that we're running right now is a medical cannabis in veterans. And so this is one that we're really excited about. It's about 100 questions. We use the same scales for PTSD and for chronic pain and PTSD and anxiety that the VA is using. And our intention within this study is to collect data and then to immediately spit it back out and really try to inform policy change at the state and the federal level. So we're actually lucky enough right now to have a bill in using our data points in the state Congress right now that would allow for veterans to just take their VA paperwork, which proves that they have a qualifying condition, and bring it directly to the Cannabis Control Commission to get their medical card without paying a separate doctor's fee, which is a huge savings for someone that's on a fixed income, especially if you're 100% disabled. And then also that bill will add opioid use disorder and PTSD as qualifying conditions for medical cannabis. So that's garnered support and is moving forward right now through the committee, which is really exciting. So, and then eventually what we want to do by mid-spring, I think, is to write a policy memo that is informing the VA that veterans need cannabis. Mm-hmm. I mean, you give a guy a gun, you teach him how to kill people, you send him off to war. You know, he gets injured, you bring him back and you stuff him full of drugs, and then you tell him weed's dangerous, right? Like, it just doesn't make any sense, you know? So I think they know what's dangerous and what's not. And so that's been a big, big thing for us to really help the veteran population. I'm pretty sure everybody knows somebody at this point that's either been to war or has not come back from war. So, you know, it's important work that we're doing right there.
Definitely, you know, I have a buddy who, you know, is at war, and, you know, he's still dealing with what he went through there and the PTSD. And, you know, basically when you come back, like you said, you know, there's so much stigma in general, you know, the stigma, the education, the miseducation, the misinformation that's still out there, you know, the reefer madness mentality.
And
people just you know, believing all kinds of stuff that they learned, you know, in 20, 30, 40 years ago and way beyond that was basically instituted just to, you know, to keep people away from being able to benefit positively from marijuana, from cannabis, you know, and you see that, you know, the opioid companies have definitely benefited from that as well. So
sure.
to bring people back and help them to treat the PTSD, their opioids, you know, with the, you know, without the use of opioids, everything like that. So,
you know, I definitely, I mean, I think we all can agree that it certainly could be an alternative therapy to pain pills and many other drugs too. So, you know, we've seen significant reduction in states like Colorado, where opioid overdoses are down by 25% in legal areas. And, you know, so the preliminary data is there and the anecdotal data, but what we really need to do is quantify that a little more. And hence why we decided to go into the research space. I think in a lot of ways we're a little bit ahead of the industry. I don't think it's quite gotten there yet where people are, you know, have the extra dollars, so to speak, to do that research. So we've had to be very, very tricky in how we've actually funded this, and very innovative, but, you know, we've been able to get some of this stuff done and made, you know, been able to make some sort of change in people's minds, I think, in Massachusetts specifically. But, you know, we do have a national sample and we are looking to move to a more national level. But we wanted to get it right here first, you know.
That's great. You know, I worked, you know, in the medical research industry for a while. And, you know, it's not too hard to find funding for, you know, for medicines, for, you know, to be able to find testing for everything like that. You know, the hardest part becomes finding the test subjects, you know, to basically become the guinea pigs, that kind of thing. And here it's the opposite.
Right. You know? Everybody wants to get, everybody would, they're jumping over hoops to get into a research study.
Exactly. And nobody wants to fund it, you know, and, you know, it's hard to get the funding for this kind of stuff. And at the same time, those same people are saying, well, there's no study shown that it's, you know, the efficacy, how can we prove this? And when there are studies, people are questioning the methods or, you know, bringing the stigma in or, you know, being surprised by the results and saying, wow, I got to look into this a little bit more. You know, people are very surprised, you know, doctors still need to be educated on these matters. You know, even where it is medicinal in certain states and where it's recreational in other states, you know, so.
Exactly.
Great. And you guys are also, you know, heading education, you know, you guys got the full spectrum, you know, it's C3RN, but it's really, you know, the trifecta of, you know, social equity, research and education. Can you talk about, you know, kind of your education center as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So recently we've been working on this project for about a year and a half. So Holyoke Community College is the oldest community college in Western Mass, in the state, and it's out in Western Mass, and it actually sits in a disproportionately affected area. The unemployment rate there is twice the rest of the state. But they're also very friendly to cannabis there. And so there's going to be numerous amounts of businesses there. And a lot of these businesses, they really need trained people and trained from a standpoint of an industry that really has no standards and training. So we recently, about 2 weeks ago now, we launched our Cannabis Education Center at Holyoke Community College. And we're starting off with 4 workforce training programs. So it would be culinary assistant, cultivation assistant, extraction infusion assistant, and patient advocate or bud tender. And their 96-hour course, with half of it being in class and the other half being on-site internships in legal dispensaries, so that they can get hands-on training. And essentially, the programs are designed for underemployed, unemployed, or underserved communities, and, you know, people in these communities to have training into the industry. And what we're essentially doing, there's a little bit of a gap when you're hiring someone, especially in Massachusetts, because you have to get a state agent card, which is costly. And unlike Colorado, where your state agent card follows you, in Massachusetts, the state agent card sits at the dispensary or the cultivation site or wherever it is.
Yeah.
So you can't just transfer your card, right, to another employer. So you would have to go through the whole process again to change jobs. And so this is a barrier for a lot of these dispensaries, and it's a barrier for people trying to get employment. And so what we're trying to do is kind of bridge that gap so that these dispensaries in the internship side, they'll have a better understanding of the workforce they're training or hiring, and so that they have less risk of, you know, having to throw away money at someone just to find out that they're no good for or not a good fit. So that's kind of our main focus there. So it's for both, you know, not only people trying to get in work in the industry, but for the people trying to hire. So it's a kind of a win-win for both. And, you know, that we're trying to fund that right now through scholarship programs, through dispensaries that need these workers, and through the general public. And then they'll also be open to just, you can purchase a seat if you want to, if you have the money, right? So I'm trying to make it accessible as possible to everybody.
Yeah, I think everybody can benefit. Like you said, it's a win-win. You know, dispensaries, hiring makes it a lot easier. Training, come in with everything like that. And don't see any reason why they wouldn't want to invest in that as well for the long term and, to give back to the community as well.
And then we're working on an entrepreneur track also, where you could look at it like either a boot camp into the industry in a sense, because, you know, each state has its unique nuances of the laws. There's also things like tax issues like 280E. There's all these things that aren't in other industries that if you were to come from another industry, say you were an executive moving into this space, you would need sort of this education to have an understanding of, like I said, the nuances within the industry, specifically in Massachusetts. But, you know, each state is going to have its own little set of quirks, if you will, you know. So understanding what they are in each state, and then, you know, ideally what we'd like to do with this curriculum is not only bring it to the rest of the community colleges in the state, but other colleges and universities throughout the nation, and then essentially globally, and really standardize this curriculum so that we have some consistency throughout, you know, because as it drops federally, you know, eventually it is going to go, we don't know the landscape of what it'll look like, but there'll be some sort of decriminalization or legalization federally at some point. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, having that, these kind of like standard curriculums in place, I think will go far in really helping other states kind of come on board. Like, you know, there's, I think 20 plus that are maybe 17 that still haven't even gone medical yet. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of opportunity there, and, you know, this is great to be here, because I'm really, really excited to get the word out about all the work that we're doing.
And hopefully we'll bring out some awareness to that as well, and help you guys along that path as well, because I'm definitely very passionate about, you know, all these things you guys are doing as well. You know, on the front lines, helping bring education. It's awesome. And something else you guys are doing, you know, Massachusetts, you know, right now just had a ban on vaping, you know, amongst this vaping crisis that's going on there, you know, in the country, actually, you know, because of lack of regulations, lack of standards, and guys, you know, everybody's kind of getting thrown into it, yeah. You know, throwing out the baby with the bathwater. What is C3RN doing there to help, you know, kind of counter that ban?
Right. So, well, we speak a lot for the medical patients. We speak a lot for the community. We have, you know, close ties with the Cannabis Control Commission. My business partner, Dr. Marion McNabb, is a doctor of public health and has worked in disease areas in HIV and AIDS in Africa, and has worked, consulted with UNICEF on their global digital health strategies. So she's really well-versed in this kind of, like, you know, you call it almost, you could compare it to an outbreak, right? So we have actually next Tuesday, we're having a press conference on the State House steps in Massachusetts, against the ban. Now, we all know bans are kind of over the top for what we're looking at here. The CDC is saying that it's unregulated tested products, unregulated products that are actually causing the crisis. In Massachusetts, we have the highest testing standards in the nation, if not the world. And now, we have recently put out a survey to just to the general public here, and, you know, we're finding all kinds of unintended consequences from banning something. You know, we're finding medical patients that can't get their medicine. They don't smoke flower. And edibles don't work on a metabolic rate for them. So the vaping is their only choice. And so now you're left without your medicine. And so that was really difficult. The state, actually, a judge just ruled yesterday that the governor's ban is can't be in effect for medical patients because the Cannabis Control Commission actually controls who would be banning that. So they gave the authority back to the CCC. Now they'll be voting tomorrow what they're going to do. So it isn't completely lifted necessarily yet, but we have sent along our recommendations to the CCC of how you should actually approach it and not ban, because as you know, what's happening is if you're saying it's an unregulated thing, when you ban something, all you're doing is driving people back to the unregulated market mm-hmm. where the products are, which is unsafe. So, you know, that is a lot of our approach. I mean, from the cigarette standpoint, which we're not super involved in, but we are seeing people going back to smoking cigarettes because they can't get their nicotine vapes. And then we have open-ended questions of people saying that, you know, this one pediatric patient is back on all their medications, whereas they had gotten off the majority of their medications using cannabis, like just a cannabis pill. So, you know, for us, we felt that we had to step up and sort of collect be a voice for the collective voice, so to speak. You know what I mean? And we've built a pretty strong network and community here. So we like to think that our word kind of has a little weight now. So yeah, I felt I had to do it.
Well, yeah, definitely. That's, you know, part of the problem is pushing people back to the unregulated market, you know, the black market. Thinking that they're doing something good by banning it, but actually the companies that are bringing these products to the market themselves are also dealing in the black market. They're not necessarily the ones that are on the up and up doing things ethically and doing it the right way. So definitely, you know, hoping you guys have success there with that, and that we see more success, you know, across the country with that, to bring awareness and not just like this hysteria that's going on.
Yeah. We have some recommendations that we put towards to the state. One of them was kind of trying to be creative, maybe some sort of a vape buyback program so that we can get some of that illegal, get some of the illicit market vapes and get tested and really see what's going on, you know. Mm-hmm. I spoke with a friend who owns a lab testing facility here, and he's seeing, so in Massachusetts, the pesticide testing is 10 parts per billion, which is really, really, really little, right? And the vape products that they're finding coming off of the illicit market are testing at 20 parts per million of pesticides. So you're looking at 2,000 times the
exponential there.
Exactly. And so just seeing that stuff and nothing that they're seeing on that is coming in from the dispensaries on the regulated market has tested positive for anything bad. So it is 100% like what we're looking at there. So that's been really interesting, you know, just to see what's really happening at the test levels.
No, that's great. I would definitely want to see some, you know, like I said, some more success there with that as well. Now, you know, doing everything you guys are doing there, C3RN, just, you know, giving back so much and really being on the front lines, you know, what kind of drives you, you know, you and Marion, you know, you specifically, but both you and everybody involved, you know, to that passion to give back. Can you kind of go into that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I think that kind of comes from within. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's, you know, because it's definitely not a monetary drive, right? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, seeing the work that we've done and how it has helped people. You know, one specific example is our research study. They use some of our data to advocate at the city council for their host community agreement. And the city councilors, they were like, oh, you know, and you can see it. And they got their host community agreement. And, you know, I'd like to think that some of the work that we've done has really helped people move forward in the industry on that level. And on the social equity side, I think it's just the right thing to do. You know, I was a prisoner of this war at one point also, you know. So for me, it's something near and dear to my heart that people have that opportunity to get into an industry that they created, essentially. Yep. And, you know, that's only the right thing to do. It's a bit of a reparations kind of a thing. Yeah. And, you know, for me, that's really what drives me. I think, you know, to speak from Marion's standpoint, you know, she worked in low income settings in Africa, just helping people. That's just who she is, you know what I mean? And she spent her entire adult career really putting other people first in her career. And, you know, so I think our combined efforts from both standpoints, from her, from the academic side, and us from, or me from the community side, you know, that's been the biggest problem is, you know, one of the reasons we created C3RN was because all of these different entities were operating silos. So you have the cannabis industry, you have academia, you have medical professionals, you have the community, and nobody's really talking to each other. You know, doctors can't talk to the dispensaries. Academia has no idea. They don't want to put their federal funding at risk. So C3RN has become sort of a hub in the spokes here where we can exchange ideas and thoughts through all these different organizations without anybody having fear of, you know, either getting their federal funding at risk or being looked at differently because they're the medical community or whatever it may be. So for us, seeing how we can bring the whole ecosystem together to work together is it's been really exciting to watch it evolve, you know.
No, definitely. And, you know, you guys have like a little power team, you know, and two different aspects and you personally being affected by it, you know, that's obviously going to drive, obviously, you know, so commend you on that. Now, you know, you talked about here, you know, having, you know, to seek funding for the research, you know, it's not, you know, where there's so much money being driven into the cannabis industry, you know, it's, you know, it's tough, you know, that you guys are still struggling for funding for the research or for the education and these amazing programs that you guys have there now. Now, what has been the biggest obstacle you guys have faced, maybe besides the funding? Is there anything else that comes to mind?
I would say, you know, just the working with academia has been difficult from a standpoint of not that they don't want to do it. It's such a delicate dance for them because the majority of them have federal funding.
Yeah.
So they're extremely careful, obviously, to not put that federal funding at risk. Mm-hmm. So it's that time has been another, you know, real hurdle. And that translates to, you know, funding. Yeah. So, you know, and then, you know, when you're stretching these things out, like we have the developed, it's a matter of getting it funded. So, it was a matter of getting them to accept to do it. And then it's a matter of funding. So I think initial hurdle is just that it was, you know, really trying to, you know, I mean, the one thing that we do have is, you know, we're a research and education organization. We're not plant touching. So that has been, at least not yet, you know, we have plans in the future to do more of that botany and biological research, but that's, you know, ahead of the game. But you know, for us, it's been a little easier, I think, because we're coming at it from an academic standpoint and giving, you know, real clout to, you know, what we're doing. So, but yeah, I would say just time, you know, how long it takes to convince people has been the most difficult.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, so much more work has to be done, you know, in the States, you know, with research and making it sexier, you know, something for people to get behind and to give back. And, you know, in Israel, they have, you know, so much testing going on and other places, you know, even in Malta, you know, there are different places that are more, you know, kind of for it as opposed to looking at it as strictly business.
Israel specifically, there's, you know, the cannabis research industry there is actually directly related to the Ministry of Health. So, they can actually do a clinical trial in 4 days. Mm-hmm. They can institute a clinical trial, you know, on human subjects.
Yeah.
And you know, you're looking at our friend, Dr. Sue Sicily. She just finished up her veterans in PTSD cannabis research study, and it was 10 years. And it was, and the DEA sabotaged her sample. So she ended up suing the DEA. We were actually on the lawsuit with her. And So because what she got was not she wasn't getting any results. You know, it wasn't helping anybody. And she's like, well, that's because they washed it in ethanol before they gave it to me. And so, you know, it's that those kind of barriers are A, ridiculous, but B, makes it very difficult and time consuming and monetary, you know, just too much money to do these. But yeah, no, we're hopeful that, you know, the industry itself, the governments themselves will start to, you know, everybody always says they need more research. Well, let's do it, you know, kind of, that's why we started doing it, you know? And like, so hopefully, you know, we're cautiously optimistic that, you know, we're positioning ourselves in a spot where when the money starts to become available, that we'll be one of the go-to people. That's our hope.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, I guess, you know, there's a lot of challenges that we still face in the industry. You know, you think the biggest problem has to do that it's still, you know, not federally legal across the board, or that it's just a basic funding or, you know, kind of sexiness issue, you know, with research? Or what kind of challenges do you feel still face, you know, that we still face as an industry and that you feel you guys are facing?
Yeah, it really is about like I think, you know, these corporations that are making the money here, the bigger guys, the multi-state operators, probably have their own in-house stuff. They don't feel the need to go outside of that. And then when you get to the next tier down, they're not fluid enough yet to actually fund something, even if they may want to, you know. So we've been doing it with like little snippets of money, and really just doing it. You know, we are working with Harvard on a one specific trial, and then, you know, we're trying to get there. I mean, that's all I can really kind of come up with is like, you know, like you said, maybe I don't know if it's the sexiness. I think people want to do research and they want to be an innovator and they want to show that they're a leader in that space. But they're hesitant to put their dollars that way right now till I think they're more established, especially in the Massachusetts market. We have been working with other groups on other applications in other states. And so we are kind of moving forward with that, because I think not only from a social equity standpoint, but the research standpoint, all these other states are looking to see what Massachusetts comes up with here. And so we're trying to do it right here first. And then I think we'll get there. You know, I'm like I said, I've been cautiously optimistic. So, you know, let's fingers crossed.
No, I know you guys will get there. That's for sure. You guys definitely will, you know, and there's no doubt about it, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's a long game versus short game, you know, and the people who are going to invest in research, they're going to be the leaders long term, you know, and that's just the bottom line. So, you know, you can make money now and you can make money later. The people who are positioning themselves, obviously, to do research, and because, like you said, it all comes down to education across the board. You know, when you're dealing with legislators, when you're dealing with doctors, when you're dealing with patients, when you're dealing with the masses, it all has to do with education. And education is going to start with the research, you know. So those people that are able to convey that message are in the long term. So anybody who's listening to this, you know, feel free to reach out to C3RN and, you know, here. And
So it's www.cannacenterofexcellence.org. Would be, I do not know my Instagram handles off the top of my head, but you could look up C3 Research Network. I think it's C3_ResearchNet. Mm-hmm. And we're on Facebook also, and Twitter, and all the lovely social media platforms. And yeah, so please reach out my email directly if you'd like, randy@c3researchnetwork.com.
Yeah, Randy is great guy, easily accessible, and they're doing amazing work over there. So definitely reach out. Now, you know, before we close, I'd love to hear, you know, it's the classic thanks discussions question. You know, I always love to hear from everybody. You know, you have an amazing story. What you guys are doing is great. So everybody has a different reason why, you know, what's the success? You know, how do you define success, and what does success look like for you?
Well, I think, you know, obviously, you know, I don't need to be rich. You know, I'd like a, you know, roof over my head, and maybe take a vacation every once in a while, and have my children go to a good school. So the success I'm looking at is really trying to really, if so, cannabis is such a complex plant, and the human body is so complex. Mm-hmm. And I think what we really need to come to is, you know, precision medicine. So finding those cultivars that actually work on specific disease and health outcomes. And if we can put those two points together and really drill down into drug development, essentially, so we can find, you know, it's a miracle plant. It absolutely is. And so I'd like to see that research go to that level. And really, I mean, you already see anecdotally what cannabis can do for people. And if we can quantify that and start, you know, the problem is it's so complex. Like I said, you know, one blue dream is not the other blue dream, is not the other blue dream in each dispensary. So, you know, really trying to solidify those cultivation practices so that we have similar terpene and cannabinoid profile outputs to really drill down into consistent medicine. Mm-hmm. I think that would be, you know, one of our biggest goals to see happen. And I think we could have the most impact, possible at that point, you know.
Definitely. It all comes down to impact, you know, and helping people. That's what the whole point of the thing is. You know, at the end of the game, it's about helping people, either people who have been affected by it or people who can benefit from it, and, you know, across the board. So I really commend you, like I said. And, you know, everybody listening, reach out to Randy, you know, doing amazing stuff. You can find out more, obviously. And thank you again, Randy, for jumping on with us today. And good luck to you for the rest of the year and beyond.
All right. Thank you so much, Mater. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
We at Calican are passionate about cannabis marketing, branding, and web design. If you're a cannabis entrepreneur and you know you need an uptake in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us. Plans start at $248. Thanks for listening in to Dank Discussions, and we are so grateful for each and every one of you. We want to continue making dank content you want, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com, that's CalacanN.com, and follow us on Instagram for our latest updates.